At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The liberal globalist order is on its brink and awakening a new conservative age. I'm Dr. Steve Turley. Join me every day as we discover answers to today's toughest challenges and explore the revitalization of conservative civilization. This is Turley Talks.
We're back with the Fox News Alert. We're just learning the FBI agents have raided the Maryland home of former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton. It happened at 7 a.m. this morning.
Shortly after the raid began, FBI Director Kash Patel posting on X, quote, "No one is above the law. FBI agents on a mission."
David Spunt joins us now with more on this breaking news. Hey, David.
Hey, guys, not much we can say at this point, but information will continue to develop. As you mentioned, about 7 o'clock this morning, FBI agents raided Ambassador Bolton's home. Notable, we're being told by two government sources that they are looking for classified documents as part of a potential leak investigation. We're told that Ambassador Bolton is not in custody. He's not under arrest. But it is notable they are at his Maryland home right now. We don't know how many agents are there. We're waiting to get a picture of the scene coming in right now. But we're told Ambassador Bolton, who was just on TV on another network a couple days ago talking about the Russia Putin Trump summit, is now under FBI investigation. Now, I want to be clear.
The hunters have now officially become the hunted. President Trump has just dropped the hammer, and it's sending shockwaves throughout D.C. this morning. He's begun raiding the homes of the deep state's most pernicious and vile snakes. This is not just another political investigation. This is the moment when one of Washington's most notorious deep state operatives finally faces the consequences of his actions. And if you're thinking this sounds too good to be true, buckle up, because we're about to see exactly why this raid represents a seismic shift in how justice works in America. We're going deep today, folks. This is going to be a comprehensive breakdown of how John Bolton's decades of foreign policy disasters, his betrayal of President Trump, and his criminal mishandling of classified information finally caught up with him. And you know the best part of it all? It's all because of you. You are not going to want to miss this. Greetings, everyone. It is live stream Friday. I am your host, Dr. Steve, your Patriot professor, here to help you make sense of all the madness as the radical left desperately tries to stop the unstoppable, the inevitable rise of a new conservative age all over the world that you are making happen. So if you want a front row seat on how you are changing the world in ways you never even imagined, make sure to smack that bell. There it is. Make sure to smack that bell and subscribe button. Boom, boom. There you go. As always, we got a jam-packed show today. Our super chats are up, so feel free to send in your comments or questions. It'd be my privilege to read them and answer them during this live stream. Also, do you remember Biden's debate disaster when he blurted out, We finally beat Medicare? Well, it's true, as Trump said, you beat it to death. Medicare touches the lives of millions of Americans, but just like about everything the government touches, it's a mess. And mistakes could cost you thousands. Between confusing rules and penalties, thousands of different plans. I mean, it's no wonder so many people are spending more than they need to because they're stuck in the wrong plan. So that's why I want to introduce you to a genuinely helpful company, Chapter. Chapter gives you personalized Medicare advice, and they actually work for you, not the government, not big insurance. They search every plan available, even those that other agents skip. And by doing this, they save people an average, get this, of $1,100 per year, and sometimes more. In fact, Chapter was able to save one couple, Joe and his wife, $3,000 every year. Chapter's advice is completely free to my audience. No fees, no pressure, just honest help for patriots. So if you're already on Medicare or are about to be, I can't recommend Chapter enough. Give them a call at 919-727-1903 to make sure your Medicare works for you. That's 919-727-1903. Most people wish they had called them sooner. Make sure you do it right now, 919-727-1903. At approximately 7 a.m. this morning, the world changed. The world that is comprised of the liberal globalist swamp creatures who up until 7 a.m. this morning thought they could literally get away with pretty much anything. They thought they could get away even getting caught using the FBI to spy on a Republican presidential candidate, and nothing in the world would ever happen to them. They could overtly weaponize entire intelligence agencies to deliberately interfere in the Democrat integrity of an election, literally banana republic tactics. Nothing would even come close to happening to them. No consequences, no accountability, nothing. They could go on CNN, MSNBC, spew lie after lie, deliberately leak classified information to the legacy media, which is a felony, of course. But they can do it with total and complete impunity and immunity. That world, as of 7 a.m. this morning, has come to an end. The sun didn't just dawn on a new day. It's dawned on a new world. A world where these deep state swamp creatures are now officially being brought to justice. A world where truly no one is above the law. At 7 a.m. this morning, the FBI kicked down the door of a $3 million Bethesda home owned by one of Trump's most vile and vocal opponents, a man considered one of the most loyal members of the deep state establishment, John Bolton, the warmongering neoconservative who spent decades pushing America into endless foreign conflicts, only to turn around and stab Donald Trump in the back the moment it became profitable. The raid was ordered by none other than FBI Director Kash Patel, who just posted, as you heard, a cryptic message, sent shockwaves through Washington. No one is above the law. FBI agents are on a mission. When federal agents descended on Bolton's $3 million mansion in Bethesda, they weren't just serving a warrant. They were delivering a message that's sending shockwaves through the Washington establishment. The timing of this operation reveals, frankly, the strategic brilliance of the Trump administration's approach to justice. We're now learning that this was not some hastily orchestrated political revenge plot. This was the culmination of years of carefully constructed legal case that had been building upon itself for months upon months, which for a brief interim was systematically dismantled by the Biden administration for political reasons, but now has been restored to its rightful place in the American justice system under President Donald J. Trump. And so what we're seeing here is something that is absolutely astonishing. We're seeing basically the culmination of something that Bolton did back in 2020. The investigation centers on classified documents from Bolton's 2020 tell-all memoir, The Room Where It All Happened. And it was a book that was meant to bring down the Trump presidency. It was meant to disparage and impugn Trump during his first term and sabotage his reelection. But as it turns out, in a glorious moment of poetic justice, The book wasn't just a betrayal of presidential confidentiality. He didn't just stab Trump in the back. The book ended up revealing a potentially criminal violation of national security law that could have endangered American intelligence sources and methods around the world. Now, based on the sources that I found, John Bolton's 2020 memoir, The Room Where It Happened, contains several categories of classified information that federal prosecutors determined were improperly disclosed without authorization. So apparently, Bolton detailed U.S. intelligence collection capabilities against foreign governments. Can't do that. He published content of private conversations between President Trump and foreign leaders, including sensitive discussions about military and intelligence cooperation. Can't do that. He released information about ongoing diplomatic negotiations that could be compromised by public disclosure. Can't do that either. He revealed intelligence sources and methods that could be used by foreign services to identify American assets. Definitely can't do that. And he published material characterized as exceptionally restricted, the most sensitive level of classified information. Now, what Bolton was supposed to do is he was supposed to submit a complete manuscript for pre-publication review by national security officials. He was then supposed to wait for clearance before publishing any version of the book, and if necessary, remove any classified information identified during the review process. But of course, that would only apply to people who are not above the law like John Bolton thinks he is. Those rules don't apply to the swamp creatures that write the rules for everyone else, but exempt themselves. So what actually happened is that Bolton submitted only a partial manuscript for review. That's very important to remember in all the legacy media spin you're going to hear in the next few days. Bolton did submit a manuscript for review, but it was only partial. It was not the complete thing. He continued writing and revising after receiving initial feedback. He published material that had never been approved for release, and he proceeded with the publication despite explicit warnings from the Trump administration officials that the book contained classified information. So during Trump's first administration, federal judges did in fact determine that Bolton likely published classified materials and exposed his country to harm. The Justice Department opened up a probe, and their investigation found at least six major categories of classified material that remained in the published book, despite Bolton's signed agreements acknowledging that unauthorized disclosure constituted a federal crime. Now, again, what is so key to get it here, especially given how the legacy media is already trying to spin this, I mean, it's basically CNN and MSNBC and a bunch of newspapers nobody reads anymore, but this is a book that was critical of Trump. That's what they're going to say. He's an autocrat. He just doesn't like books written about him that are critical. Rah, 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 rah. Gang, books critical of Trump are a dime a dozen. They're published every single freaking day. CNN and MSNBC are entire, New York Times, LA Times, their entire industries dedicated to being critical of Trump. There are all kinds of self-purported tell-alls. There's all kinds of tabloid rumors about Trump. That's not what this is about. This is not about a book critical of Trump. Instead, there is a very real criminal element to this book. The criminal issue was Bolton's decision to publish highly sensitive national security information without proper vetting, without proper authorization. potentially compromising American intelligence sources and methods, and to make it even worse, for a reported $2 million book advance. This is why the FBI raid occurred this morning. It's about enforcing classification law that protects national security, not about the political content of criticisms. And getting paid to reveal those national security secrets to boot. But there's something even more pernicious going on here. What makes all of this even worse is that despite the Justice Department's findings back in 2020, the incoming Biden administration buried the investigation. Bolton's investigation was shuttered by the Biden administration for what sources now describe as purely political reasons. The Biden administration's decision to abandon this investigation back in June of 2021 was payback. They literally were paying back Bolton for his support and his role in effectively sabotaging Trump. Effectively, but temporarily. So this shuttering of a perfectly valid Justice Department investigation represented yet again a fundamental breakdown in the rule of law that was the chief attribute of the Biden administration. I don't say Joe Biden because he was sleeping half the time. It was the inner circle. It was the snakes, the Slytherins surrounding him, the worm tongues surrounding him. Rather than allowing federal prosecutors to pursue legitimate criminal charges against Bolton for his clear violations of classification law, the Biden Justice Department prioritized political considerations over national security, effectively telling every future government official that classification laws don't apply to those with the right political connections. Now, obviously, this decision undermined the entire intelligence community's ability to function effectively. And it sent a very, very dangerous message to foreign adversaries about America's commitment to protecting its most sensitive secrets. And again, just to underscore how pernicious this all was, Bolton's memoir earned him a reported $2 million advance from Simon & Schuster. So this wasn't just publishing classified information, highly sensitive national security information without proper vetting and authorization. He did it for money. He was paid millions of dollars in doing this. And the Biden administration was perfectly cool with that. Obviously. It only happens to be the Biden family business model. Hello, Hunter, Burisma, the big guy. Bolton and Biden both represent the rot, the corrosive corruption that permeates the permanent political class. And that's why the probe was dropped. Because Bolton was one of the gang. He was part of the club. A club that operates under the assumption that they write the rules for everyone else while at the same time exempting themselves from any and all accountability. That was the world of the John Boltons that have infested Washington, D.C. for decades. Career bureaucrats and corrupt politicians who literally live above the law while forcing the rest of us to comply with the rules they write for everyone else. That is the way our capital city has operated for years. That is until you came into the picture. You. You did something that changed all of that. You rose up and changed our nation like never before. You became the swamp's worst nightmare. And that is where this story takes a stunning turn. But the real irony in all of this is that while corrupt bureaucrats like John Bolton have been weaponizing the system against patriots, there's actually never been a better time for freedom-loving Americans to take control of their financial future. In fact, if you've been wanting to get into crypto investing like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, right? But you've always been turned off or intimidated by the volatility, well, meet your knight in shining armor. BlockTrust IRA has a super AI system that Bitcoin Magazine has named the number one crypto technology platform in the entire world. That's among 1,500 global competitors. And what that super AI does, you're going to love this. It works 24/7 to analyze global market data and predicts with uncanny accuracy the highs and lows of crypto volatility. So BlockTrust IRA then sells at the highs and then buys again at the lows, which mitigates the volatility all the while you stand to make incredible gains. So that's why I'm a proud client of BlockTrust IRA. I've got my own account with them. Again, I got it to, I absolutely love them. Their mission perfectly aligns with President Trump's Make America Great Again agenda, smashing down the barriers between loyal patriots and the financial freedom they deserve, helping true Americans build impressive wealth in Trump's historic economic boom. So whether you're a teacher or a truck driver or a small business owner or retiree, this is your chance to get into the crypto market with AI mitigating your volatility risk. So what are you waiting for? Click on that link below or visit TurleyTalksCrypto.com and find out how they can help you join the Trump financial revolution that's finally giving forgotten Americans access to the greatest crypto wealth opportunity in history. And the best part, for a limited time, they're offering my viewers actually up to $2,500 in bonus crypto when you open up an account with them. It's amazing. I love them. Again, I have an account with them. I'm a client, as it were. Don't wait on this. You're going to love it. Crypto created 80,000 new millionaires last year. Hey, why not you next? This is the golden age, isn't it? Visit TurleyTalksCrypto.com. That's TurleyTalksCrypto.com. On November 5th, 2024, you, along with your fellow patriots, tens of millions of you all across the nation, rose up. I love that picture. Rose up and said, enough. Enough. Enough of the lies. Enough of the freaking corruption. Enough of the arrogant unaccountability. We together, tens of millions of us, are taking our nation back. We are wrenching it from the clutches of this corrupt political class. And we are going to restore our nation to a nation of decency, honor, and virtue. Cash Patel's handling of this investigation really represents everything patriots have been hoping for in federal law enforcement for years. Competent, principled, absolutely fearless in the face of Washington's corrupt establishment. Cash didn't just authorize this raid. He orchestrated it. He orchestrated as part of a broader strategy to restore accountability to the intelligence community that has operated without meaningful oversight for far too long, systematically abusing its power to advance political agendas rather than protecting American national security. What makes Cash's approach particularly effective is his deep understanding of how the intelligence apparatus actually works, which he gained through years of experience inside the system, witnessing firsthand how figures like John Bolton manipulated classified information and intelligence processes for personal and political advantage. We have to remember that unlike previous FBI directors, like, you know, James Comey, for example, who came from outside the national security world and relied on briefings from the same establishment figures they should have been investigating, Cash, by contrast, he spent years as a House Intelligence Committee staffer, federal prosecutor, National Security Council official. All of that gave him unique insight into the methods these operators use to avoid accountability. Cash's background as both a federal prosecutor and a national security expert gives him unique credibility in pursuing cases like this. He understands the legal standards required for successful prosecutions of classification violations. And more importantly, he understands the intelligence community's traditional methods of avoiding accountability through claims of executive privilege, national security exceptions, or political interference. This is just a witch hunt. Yeah, right. When Cash publicly stated his commitment to rigorous constitutional accountability, he wasn't making empty political promises. And I think the deep state is finally realizing that now. He was announcing a fundamental shift in how federal law enforcement approaches elite misconduct. Now, that said, I know, believe me, you have told me loud and clear. I know we've all been frankly running out of patience with this. We've always said on our channel over these last since January 20th, the crushing of the administrative state, the absolute permanent destruction of the administrative state involves two overall verticals, two overall phases, as it were. The first involves dismantling the deep state by doging all the departments. And then the second involves the indictments of the criminal elements that have thus far operated with impunity. So dismantling and indictments are the 1-2 punches, as it were, the left-right that promised to floor the administrative state permanently. So we've seen the doging, right? We've seen the dismantling phase. So we've seen USAID shutter its windows, close its doors permanently. We've seen the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is behind PBS, go defunct. We've seen the Department of Education abolished, all that kind of stuff. So that's the doging or the dismantling of the administrative state. But we have all been asking for the last 6.5 months, where the heck are the indictments? We've got the doging, but where's the indictments? That is what we've all been running out of patience for sure. No question. But as of 7 a.m. this morning, I think we can now all see that that next phase, the indictment phase, has begun. I think the timing of this raid demonstrates Cash Patel's strategic acumen and understanding of both legal procedure and political dynamics. It's not just the fact that it's happening against the backdrop of revelations that Adam Schiff is under investigation, James Comey is under investigation, Comer is under investigation, Letitia James is under 3 investigations. We reported on that yesterday. It's not just that this home raid is happening against the backdrop of that. It's also just the methodological strategy that Cash is using. Rather than rushing into politically charged prosecutions that might be dismissed as partisan revenge, plausibly so. And by the way, not that anyone would really blame Trump for doing that, given what they did to him. Regardless, Cash took the high road. He spent months building what appears to be bulletproof cases and establishing clear legal precedents that will withstand judicial scrutiny. So here's my namesake, Jonathan Turley, law professor, George Washington University, on how Bolton may actually be looking at up to 20 years in prison as of this morning. Check this out.
Intriguing here, because these are long-standing allegations that the book indicated or referenced classified material that he may have acquired when he was in the administration. We're not clear as to what that is, but it would suggest that it could be national defense information. The reason that's important is that creates a heightened potential penalty. So you can have penalties that range from 5 to 20 years. 20 years tends to be the sentences for concealing information, obstructing justice. Simply having classified information can weigh in at about 10 years, and there are often multiple counts because each of those documents can be charged separately. So there is a strange history here. So you had these allegations coming out as early as the first Trump administration. Then there was an allegation that the Biden administration essentially scuttled a further look at this case. Right. And now we have this new development. But we really don't know if there's something that has occurred most recently, whether they uncovered something that they believed is sort of evergreen, that this is still a viable criminal case.
So,
okay, so the key again here is that Bolton's memoir, The Room Where It Happened, contain what federal judges have already determined to be improperly disclosed classified information spanning multiple categories of sensitive intelligence. Again, the specifics we don't really have, but we do have the fixed point in history back in 2020, the Justice Department's original 2020 investigation conducted by career federal prosecutors with expertise in classification law. They identified at least six major categories of classified material that remained in the published book, despite Bolton's legal obligation to submit all materials for pre-publication review. Again, these categories included information characterized as exceptionally restricted, which is the kind of intelligence that could jeopardize sources and methods if disclosed to unauthorized recipients. And to make matters even worse, Bolton got paid millions to do it. He got paid millions to disclose this sensitive and classified information. He personally profited off of disclosing classified material. Now, Bolton's defense strategy, and what you're going to hear in the legacy media guaranteed, is that, I think it ironically reveals both his arrogance and his fundamental misunderstanding of classification law. His attorneys have been claiming that a senior career official in the NSC's pre-publication review process had conducted a four-month review of the book and concluded that the book contained no classified information. So guaranteed, that is what you're going to hear on CNN and MSNBC. That, sorry, guys. National Security Agency's official reviewed this book for 4 months and concluded the book contained no classified information. End of story. This is just political retribution. This is Trump, you know, getting revenge on his enemies, blah, blah, blah. But this defense, which you have to remember, this defense ignores the fact that Bolton had submitted only a partial manuscript for review. Remember, we talked about that earlier. He submitted only a partial manuscript for review. He continued writing and revising the book after receiving feedback, and he published material that had never been approved for release. Bottom line. Full stop, as Ketanji Jackson would say. He published material that had never been approved for release. He did not submit the full manuscript. And even more damaging to his case, Bolton published the book despite receiving explicit official warnings from the Trump administration officials that it contained classified information that could not be legally disclosed. So it's not like he wasn't warned. But what made Bolton's actions particularly damaging to American national security is the precedent that they set for future officials. If high-ranking national security advisors can publish classified information for personal profit without facing any criminal consequences whatsoever, the entire classification system becomes meaningless. That is, until 7 a.m. this morning. This morning, the Trump administration's investigation of Bolton sent an unmistakable message to the whole of the swamp that the days of protected status for establishment figures are definitively over. You're going to get raided. You're going to get indicted. And you're going to get prosecuted. The same legal standards that apply to every other American will now apply to former national security officials, regardless of their political connections, media relationships, or ideological alignment with intelligence community preferences. The American people deserve to know the full extent of this corruption, and they deserve to see comprehensive accountability for the officials who have abused their positions for decades. Make no mistake, Bolton's prosecution will provide a roadmap for future cases that expose the systematic abuse of government power by establishment figures who consider themselves above the law. After all, the intelligence community's protection of Bolton during the Biden years illustrates just how deeply this corruption runs throughout the entire federal bureaucracy. Former CIA Director John Brennan, former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, dozens of other former intelligence officials, FBI, Comey and all, they all publicly defended Bolton's right to publish classified information while simultaneously participating in disinformation campaigns of their own, deliberately designed to sabotage a presidency. The entire system has been infected. And so looking ahead, I think today's raid of Bolton's home means that we can expect to see additional prosecutions of intelligence community figures who participated in politically motivated investigations, foreign policy officials who leaked classified information to influence American elections, hello, Adam Schiff, and media figures who knowingly spread disinformation on behalf of government sources. The precedents established by Bolton's case promise to provide the legal foundation for these future prosecutions while deterring similar violations by current officials who might otherwise be tempted to abuse their positions. It's increasingly looking as if Bolton's prosecution will be the first domino to fall in the complete dismantling of the intelligence community's corruption. The swamp, we can safely say, is now finally being drained. And it's even more satisfying than we could have ever imagined. We might even say, it's morning again in America. Over to you. I want to hear what you have to say. If you're just joining us, I'd love to hear your thoughts on all of this. Let us know what you think by either sending us a super chat or by clicking on the link below and joining our Courageous Patriot Club, where for just one monthly fee, I'll feature your comments on our broadcasts, and you can ask me as many questions as you like. I'll be happy to answer them here on this live stream. Either way, super chats or Courageous Patriots Club, whatever you like. Also, if you are a homer? If you are a homeowner like me, you need to listen to this. When was the last time you checked on your home title? That's the legal proof that you own your house. Well, if you're like me, the answer to that is never. The problem is that in today's AI and cyber world, scammers are stealing home titles and your equity is the target. So it works like this. Criminals forge your signature on one document. They use a fake notary stamp. They pay just a small fee with your county and boom, that's it. Your home title has been transferred out of your name. And then they take out loans using your equity. Some even sell your property and you won't know what's happening until you get collection notices or foreclosure notices. So that's why you need to stop what you're doing right now. Find out today if you've already been a victim. Just use promo code TurleyTalks at HometitleLock.com. TurleyTalks is all one word. And you can see if your title is still in your name. You also, in that process, you get a free title history report plus a free 14-day trial of their $1 million triple lock protection. It's 24/7 monitoring of your title, urgent alerts to any changes, and if fraud should happen, they'll spend up to $1 million to fix it. Go to HomeTitleLock.com right now. Use promo code TurleyTalks. That's HomeTitleLock.com. Promo code TurleyTalks. All right. All right. A new day has dawned. 7 a.m. What do you guys think? Let's hear it. Voldemort. Thank you for the super chat. Steve, you are the true heir to Russia's legacy. Keep up the great work. God bless you, Voldemort. He who must not be named. God bless you for that. I do not deserve that. I am not worthy of that. I met Rush, you may know this, back in 96 when he used to do his TV show. A bunch of us went up at college. We were at college at the time, and we went up and saw Rush and a taping of the show. We were down the hall from Sally Jesse Raphael, so it's a very funny story. We're all there in our suits, and then you had kind of the strange sort of, you know, riffraff that go to Sally Jesse Raphael shows. And Rush couldn't have been kinder. He couldn't have been sweeter. He met with all of us, chatted with us. We got his autograph. He was unbelievable, and I miss him. I miss him dearly. Whenever I hear his voice, you know, you just get that warm feeling of just, because when you heard Rush talk, you've just felt like everything was going to be okay. And, you know, to the extent that I'm able to carry on that legacy, you know, it's just, it's my honor. So thank you. Thank you, Voldemort. Rothko, Dr. Steve, March 10 to 16, the worst week for Democrats. March 17 to 20, the actual worst week for Democrats. March 24th, the worst new worst week. 20 worst weeks for Democrats later. August 18 to 24, worst week for Democrat yet. Other than losing 2026 or 2028, when will the worst week for Democrats actually be the worst week for Democrats? I know many of us are here enjoying it, but it's really starting to get kind of sad now. Yeah, not tired of winning, right? Not tired of winning. Oh, boy. I don't know. 2026, the way the midterms are shaping up right now, that's going to be a kick in the solar plexus for them. That's for sure. They're falling apart there. The voter registration crisis that even the New York Times is talking about. And that's probably the single most predictive indicator for how an election is going to turn out is voter registration trends. And Republicans are crushing Democrats, like 2-1, 3-1. It's been a, 4.5 million voter swing to Republicans since 2020. And then, of course, 2028 will be a disaster. Gavin Newsom is already turning out to be an absolute disaster. I don't know. Maybe the Minneapolis, Somali socialist in Minneapolis. Maybe if he becomes their major poster child and presidential candidate, that would probably be the word. That would be the day we realize a third party is going to come about. There is going to be a party to replace the Democrats, and they'll go the way of the Whigs. But yeah, as things stand right now, we're crushing it, man. We're crushing it at every freaking level. It's awesome. Will O'Toole, would Trump ever push for both Ukraine and Russia to be part of a nation, thus thwarting any future conflicts with Putin and the Russians, and at the same time offering Ukraine some protection to be part of? Do you mean NATO? Oh, I think you meant NATO. There you go. Could Ukraine and Russia both become part of NATO? Now, it's funny. I have seen that idea floated around, that one thing we could do is we can offer Russia NATO membership. And then it just completely pulls the rug out from under the central concern. I mean, he could. It's very clever. There's nothing to say, though, that two NATO nations can't go at it, as I understand it. But that said, I don't know about that. I think Russia so distrusts NATO right now. They so distrust the West, rightly so. I mean, for good or bad, I'm not saying Russia's angels in this, but the West has betrayed Russia over and over and over again. It's never missed a chance to betray Russia. And certainly Russia has reciprocated. So I just, the bad blood there is so strong. But it is, I love the way you're thinking. It's a brilliant sort of counterintuitive measure that would, at least on the surface, seem to resolve the issue. But I don't think NATO would agree to it either. They turn Russia. I mean, NATO is there to be an anti-Russian force. So NATO itself would have to be completely realigned in terms of its mission, goals, vision, and so on, rationale. So we'll have to see. Great. I love it, though, Will. Maximilian, if emancipatory politics is about liberating oneself from unchosen bonds, why can't liberate myself from emancipatory politics? Well said, Maximilian. So if you don't know, if you guys don't know, Maximilian's using very technical language here, political and analytical language. So emancipatory politics is the politics of globalism. So what globalism in effect is a one-size-fits-all political and economic system that's supposed to be superimposed upon the world. The problem is that unique and peculiar cultures, customs, traditions, religions sort of get in the way of that project of imposing this one-size-fits-all political and economic system. And so globalist systems entail something called emancipatory politics, where they recast those cultures, customs, and traditions as inherently racist, bigoted, phobic, and the like. And therefore now they think they have the high ground in seeking to liberate populations from their customs and their religions and their patriarchal traditions and so on. But what Maximilian is identifying is sort of the key, the Achilles heel in liberalism as a whole, emancipatory politics is just a fancy way of talking about the political system that is liberalism. He's identifying the Achilles heel, the inherent contradiction. There's a few inherent in liberalism, which is liberalism says we want you to be free. We want you to be free from all oppressive structures. And then the joke is, okay, but can I be free from liberalism? When liberalism's telling me it's okay for a trans athlete to spike a volleyball into the face of the girl on the other side of the net, or a trans athlete swimmer to come in first place by 20 seconds. If I, as a female athlete, if I find that oppressive, can I be liberated from that? Can I be emancipated? And of course, the answer is no. And so that's why that's why in the Russian tradition, if you look at the history of Russian conservatism in the 20th century, very, very interesting studies. John Anderson, if I recall, is one of the, did I get that right? John Anderson, not, I think John Anderson's the Australian, Robinson. Is it Robin? Oh, I forget. There's a Russian scholar. If you just look up the history of Russian conservatism, he does a very good study showing how Russians back in the early 90s were calling liberalism liberal totalitarianism. They recognized that liberalism says you're free to do anything you want except be unliberal or illiberal or anti-liberal. You're not free to do that. And it's an inherent contradiction. It shows you the inherent futility in this notion that liberation is the ultimate end in and of itself, because inevitably you're going to be liberating, emancipating people from the very source of true emancipation. You're going to be emancipating people from things that from which they should not be emancipated from: faith, family, freedom, and so forth. And those faith, family, and freedom provide the basis for true freedom, for true liberty, for true emancipation, because it's not just being emancipated from, it's also being emancipated to something positive, something that's true, good, and beautiful. And when you're constantly freeing people from their traditions of the true, the good, and the beautiful, you end up undermining the very foundations of freedom itself, and hence you become just another totalitarian system. So brilliant, Maximilian, you're always brilliant. You know that. When I grow up, I'm going to be just like you. Davros, Cracker Barrel changed its logo. The guys online, even the Fox News Facebook account, are saying Cracker Barrel has gone woke. It looks like it's their Bud Light moment. Seems like they've just gone lame. The Dominion making everything woke is a real problem. But are freedom people starting to have a problem calling everything woke? Do we not risk diminishing the meaning of the word woke in the same way that Dominion is cheapened through overuse the word racist? Great. That's a great question, Davros. Yeah. I mean, sure. You can end up diluting the meaning of a word through its overuse. Absolutely. Kind of sky is falling, crying wolf kind of, you know, fable-ish application there. Yeah, I guess I think the reason why people like Chris Rufo and others are starting to zero in on Cracker Barrel is because it exemplifies all of the same dynamics as the Bud Light fiasco. So you got a CEO, you know, an executive coming in again, you know, just this, you know, white liberal woman. Oh my gosh, Josh, that's too funny. Oh, Josh has too much time on his hands. That's right. Well, we all know which one we prefer there. That's right. I've also seen they want to bring back the logo, the man on the porch, and they're making it Trump with a shotgun or something like that, sitting on the rocking chair on the porch. It's exemplifying the same pattern. It's a white liberal woman, you know, executive who's, we don't even know why she's an executive in the first place. It's obviously not because of competence. It's because of what we call bio-Leninism, when people are promoted not for competence, but because they check the right identity boxes, and therefore competence becomes the first victim in that. And so bio-Leninist systems always are guaranteed to implode under the weight of their own incompetency, their own competency crisis. So you've got this CEO coming in, then she's making all these changes because she's claiming it's all out, all what they've been doing is all outdated, and we have to get with the times, and we don't believe in this stuff anymore. We want to be bold and progressive and new and woke. And well, they're not using the word woke, and that everybody's behind it. We're getting all this great feedback. It's literally, she's playing the very playbook that the Bud Light marketing CEO played, and it was a disaster, and it's already been a disaster for Cracker Barrel. Again, we don't have to even say anything. We don't have to even use the word woke. They've lost billions in market cap just the following day after the new logo was run. The exact opposite, of course, American Eagle with the Sydney Sweeney campaign that gained billions in market valuation because of Harvard. It's very interesting. There was a Harvard study on marketing that found that conservative marketing was on the rise, that appealing to traditional nationalist populist values was on the rise because they called it aspirational marketing, that marketing that appeals to the best of us and the best of our ideals and so forth is what consumers are really attracted to, not being lectured to of how racist and bigoted and sexist we are. Brian, good to hear from you, my friend. Is there anything to be made of the judge who granted the environmentalist successes in their alligator Alcatraz lawsuit? No, I think it'll be overturned. I don't think we have to worry about that. The appellate process has been pretty darn kind to us of late. I mean, we just found that out with the whole Letitia James, Judge Ngoron case that just more or less got kicked out yesterday or thrown out. I don't think so. Again, these are just these temporary things. At least it's not a nationwide injunction. I have to see, was it a Florida court? Either way, it'll get overturned. I don't expect any delays there, especially if it's a federal because of the supremacy clause. If this is a federal agent detention facility, they'll be able to remove that injunction. Alan just saw on X an Obama-appointed judge, yeah, has ordered alligator Alcatraz closed and dismantled within 60 days. I know it won't happen. Good for you, but it is. But to the point that SCOTUS is going to have to take discipline measures, it may be. Yeah, a single judge can't turn around and shut down federal operations if it's a state judge. So I don't think we have to worry about that at all. Maximilian, is there any proof that Karl Popper's open society is real, possible, or even desirable? Well, certainly George Soros would hope that it is. I see the open... How do I put this? I see the open society as a veneer. So open societies are basically, they claim to be radically Democrat democratic societies with full transparency in how government operates, but they're dedicated to eradicating culture, custom, tradition. It's a one-size-fits-all political and economic system superimposed upon all cultures, totally irrespective of their customs and their traditions. If politics is downstream from culture, open society concept flips that. It inverts that and makes culture now subservient to this one-size-fits-all, you know, ideological, abstracted politics and economics. And so to me, it's just all a veneer for a very small collective elite to centralize power and affluence in the end. And this is just the way that they think they can sell it, that kind of centralization to the world. Because I think in many ways, open societies is ultimately connected to a de facto one world government to protect the open societies. And we find too, it tends today to be so connected with environmental apocalypticism that you're not allowed to vote who you want in, because your vote could literally destroy the planet. If you want to bring in these evil populists, then now all of a sudden your vote is a threat to human survival. That's the way they think. So they see themselves as perfectly justified in overturning elections through color revolutions and so on. Lord of Strongberg. While they were attacking Trump, his team was seeing where the shots was coming from. Would you agree? While they were attacking Trump, his team was seeing where the shots were coming from. Yeah, I mean, I think you're being metaphorical, right? We're not talking about Butler, but yeah, no, that's right. This is what they're so horrified by. They're horrified by the fact that, you know, this was, I mean, I hate to say it, but in a sense, you know, this is a do or be done. How's that? I'll say it that way. I mean, you know, they came on out. Yeah, I mean, especially like Comey and Clapper, James Comer, Brennan, they all came out. You know, I mean, Adam Schiff, you name it. They all came out and Hillary Clinton, they all publicly showed their cards. They are trying to take this guy down. Now, the reason why they showed their cards in this is because the legacy media was rewarding every politician that was showing their cards. The legacy media and the Democrats and the establishment in general, the Mitt Romneys, the Paul Ryans, at the time, the John McCains, they were all united in trying to get rid, and John Bolton's, they were all united in trying to get rid of Trump. That was their mission. Trump was an existential threat to their world, the world that they had built, where they make the rules and they're not accountable to anybody. So it's a world of power and affluence we simply have never seen before, because it's done at a global scale. So they showed their bona fides for all the world to see via the media, because the media was rewarding that. They were saying that's virtuous. It's good. Look at how brave these guys are. Look at what kind of patriots these guys are. And so you bet everybody. So there is this undercurrent, deep state undercurrent that's going on. That's pretty dark and seedy. That's the Epstein realm. That's the Epstein sort of level. But then you have the surface level. That's very real. That's where they do come out into the sunlight. I guess these are the vampires that can deal with the sun. And they show their cards for everybody to see. I'm mixing all my metaphors, but you get the point. And now what we seem to be doing is we're hitting them at both levels. We'll have to see what happens with the whole Epstein thing, but we're certainly hitting them at that surface level. Everybody who came out and showed their cards, now we're going to take you out. Yeah. I mean, we've got all the evidence. We've got you incriminating yourself online, you know, on television, on CNN and MSNBC. Baja Cat, more bipartisan internet censorship bills like the one from Marsha Blackburn are popping up under the guise of saving the kids. I'm against letting minors access adult content, but most see this as a backdoor assault on free speech and a way to deplatforming artist creators and independent political pundits the establishment don't like. How real is this threat becoming here in the U.S.? It's a good question. I don't really know. I don't I think we have to get used to not seeing threats all the time. I do. I think we have to kind of, as much as I love Alex Jones, I think we do have to sort of exorcise the sky is falling kind of Chicken Little element here. I'm not accusing you of that, even though I kind of am subtly. But I don't mean to. I just think we're winning so much. Let's focus on the winning. If there is something really serious, like with the concern about Pam Bondi and Epstein and the mishandling of that, we'll make it very, very clear before any kind of bill that can silence us. We'll make it very clear we will not be silenced. We will find ways of bypassing that. Certainly Elon is on our side with that. He seems to be more and more ditching this whole stupid notion of the America Party, which is one of the dumbest. It was just one of the dumbest impulsive moments of his life, it seems to me. So I'm not seeing anything that's giving me warning flags, but we'll see. Keep us up to date on it. Bob, how does it feel to be treated? Oh, yeah, question to John Bolton. How does it feel to be treated like Donald Trump has been? It is one of the most delicious examples of ironic justice or poetic justice imaginable, that a swamp creature like Bolton, who was accusing Trump at the time with the Mar-a-Lago raid, that he improperly used, or he was improperly handling classified information, which is a contradiction in terms when you're the president. You're the only person on the planet where that rule does not apply, because you're the person who does have ultimate classification authority. The president has ultimate plenary classification authority. He cannot be guilty of mishandling classified information by definition. He is the president. The opposite would be then that unelected intelligence bureaucrats, career bureaucrats, have ultimate authority over intelligence classification and therefore can weaponize that to silence any duly elected political authorities that they don't like they tried to do with Trump. So yeah, the irony is that Bolton is now in the very position that he claimed Trump was in. But for him, because he wasn't president, he doesn't have plenary authority. He's shot, whereas Trump, these were charges that never were even remotely valid. But again, you can't tell MSNBC that. You can't tell the New York Times that, because they've already pre-convicted him. They just need to find a crime. TC Suffolk. I watched Promethean updates hosted by Barbara and Susan. You were referenced, in their live chat. Lots of crossover. Please check them out. Possible collab. I will. I'll make a note of that. I do like them. They focus obviously a lot on what's going on in Britain. So yeah, Barbara and Susan will have to hook up. Thank you for that, TC Suffolk. Cody, 2102, Obama has been coming out a little from under his rock recently. How much power does he still have in the Democrat Party? Not much. He still has power in the apparatus, in the power structure. He got rid of Joe, as I understand it. That was Barack. Barack got rid of Joe, but Barack did not want Kamala. That's the word on the street. And yet she showed that she could circumvent him. So he has nowhere near the power, say, for example, of Trump. If Trump wants something, he gets it in the party. And if somebody tries to circumvent him, that person gets crushed real fast. That's just pure raw political power, for right or for wrong. It's just pure power. So because that's what politics is in the end, power. So I just don't think Obama has that much power. Again, he has a lot of power in the globe. Well, I don't even know how much power he has. He has a lot of glitz and glam in the globalist circles that he runs, the Davos-like circles. And he still has some power inside the Democrat apparatus. But the Democrat apparatus right now barely has any power. They can't control Mamdani. They did not want Mamdani. They certainly didn't want. Well, they're doing their best. It looks like they're going to sink this Somalian socialist. We'll have to see. The Democrat Party there in Minnesota withdrew their. I don't know if you heard. They just withdrew their support of him because they said there looked like there were some irregularities in the primary process. Yeah, right. No, they just saw the polling, national polling, and it was a disaster. I don't think the Democrats have a lot of power inside the apparatus itself. It's just a dying party at this point. Cody, let's all take a moment to enjoy how lucky we are to be living in an era where the likes of Obama, Woodward, Fauci, et cetera, have all lived long enough to see their legacies completely destroyed. Amen to that. That gets some applause across the nation, across the world. Amen to that. That is a brilliant observation, Cody. It is amazing for them to see their legacies collapse. It is. Again, this is what they were panicked about. This is what they were so worried about. The Bushes, the Obamas, the Clintons, they were all seeing the world they helped create, both parties, right? The duopoly, the uniparty, the world they helped create collapse. And then that means they might be held accountable. Yeah, you know, we don't know how to live in a world we didn't create. And so, yeah, they're freaking out. And make no mistake, as of right now, as we speak, they are freaking out. They are lawyering up. As I heard, Adam Schiff is big time. The Schiff is hitting the fan. He is lawyering up big time. They're all lawyering up because they know the world that they built is no longer there to protect them. MAGA24EVER, Dr. Steve Trump posted he's going to do an EO to eliminate mail-in voting and electronic machines. Can it be that simple, or would it need Congress's help to codify? I don't think it's going to need Congress's help. The only thing I'm seeing is that the Supreme Court might knock it down because all plenary authority for elections constitutionally resides in the state legislature. So not even the governor in individual states has authority over elections. It is the state legislatures, not necessarily the federal or executive branch. But there are basic. This is where the Voting Rights Act is coming in, and it's going to get kind of looks like it's going to get overturned by the way it's been abused of late. But there are some properly basic protocols that all elections have to abide by, 14th Amendment and so on. You're not allowed to deny people their due process and being able to be able to have their vote count and so on. So yeah, that's the only one I know of that might get in the way of this, that the Supreme Court might come in and say, look, if Washington wants, like it does, state of Washington wants to do its election entirely by mail-in ballot, that's its deal. Now, the argument against that, and this is what Texas is arguing, Florida's arguing, is that disenfranchises Floridians and Texans who, because they can show that mail-in voting is the most unsecure form of voting. And so that has the potential of diluting their legally cast valid votes with legally cast but potentially invalid votes with the mail-in voting. So it is going to be an interesting thing to play out. I'm just glad Trump is fearless, and he has, you know, people might, again, like in past conservative administrations, you know, you might have somebody in a cabinet meeting saying maybe we should do something like that, and it'll just get shot down. Oh, no, the Supreme Court will never let it happen. And then they'll just bury it. Whereas Trump is like, no, let's see what happens. Let's do it because it's the right thing to do. I don't care what the Supreme Court does. Whatever Supreme Court that they're going to do, we need to do what's right and good for the American people. That's what I just love about Trump. Troublemaker Jason, do you think DJT will remove the Federal Reserve governor before the September Fed meeting? If he doesn't, do you think we might see a much larger rate cut than the predicted 25 basis points? So it looks like we're, I don't know. I'm trying to get it. I'm looking at the whole thing at Jackson Hole, the latest meeting of the Fed there. So you had two governors dissent from Jerome Powell. They're almost always unanimous, as I understand it. It is incredibly rare to have governors dissent. And they did. Now, one resigned, if I recall, and Trump replaced her or him. I expect the rate to be cut. That's what I'm getting the sense of. Everyone is talking about we're going to get a rate cut, but I don't know by how much. I don't know the basis points. And I don't know if Trump is going to remove the Federal Reserve governor before September Fed meeting. You're not talking about Jerome Powell. You may be talking about one particular Federal Reserve governor. So we'll have to see. Bismo Funyuns forever, people. State woke is dead while all mainstream outlets march on the same. Movies, music, publishing, liberal academia, etc. Has society so greatly split that we can win, but it doesn't reform anything? Great question. Great question. I don't think so, because in the end, the momentum goes where the dollars go. And, for right or for wrong, the dollars are going to be controlled at least to an extent by the people. I know you can't compare like mass billionaires and so forth, but what we saw with the parallel economy starting in really on January 6, 2021, where more and more conservative voices were being silenced as being insurrectionists and the like. And even Trump himself was being canceled and they were being, deplatformed and debanked and so forth. What we found is we can actually create an economy. We can create universities and colleges. We can create channels and broadcasting companies, and we can create music and movies that are not woke. And then they become incredibly lucrative. Like Public Square. Public Square is a great company. Michael Seifert, the CEO, their youngest public CEO, I believe, in the country, or was at the time Public Square went public. They redefined how you do online business, and it has nothing to do with wokeness. Or you have Red Balloon .work. That finds patriots all across the country jobs in companies that are totally anti-woke, and finds employees for companies that they know will not be woke when they come on in. So we just created this parallel economy. We found BRICS at an international level, created an entire parallel international economic order to push back against the increasing wokeness of G7. And these just became very effective. They decoupled themselves overwhelmingly from the larger woke world, the woke institutions that you point to. Elon Musk became the richest man in the country or in the world, became a champion of this parallel economy, and then mainstreamed it by acquiring X. So it just seems to me they can stay as woke as they want. We will live and we will support businesses that laugh at this dead wokeness. And then what you're noticing is even, more and more Fox, even CNN, they're all just coming out and just saying, enough with it. I mean, this woke stuff is done. It's a losing battle. Nobody wants it. It's an 80-20 doom loop. And, the more you double down on it, the less people take you seriously. And that's just not a movement that has any sustainability. That's the way I see it. Molly, I second Larry Benton Collins' question. When will Bill Barr be investigated as per the recent revelations coming forward? He's been among the worst of the traitors among the rhinos. Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm with you, Molly. Now, keep in mind, John Bolton, I think, technically was a Republican, as was Bill Barr. So, no, I mean, they're coming after establishment swamp creatures. They don't care what party you're in because they know in the end your loyalty is to the swamp, not to the people. So we'll have to see. I don't have any inside information on Bill Barr, but he's definitely one of them. He's one of the worst. Interesting, though, that Bill Barr just publicly testified that there was nothing incriminating about Trump in the Epstein files. That was very interesting. And I'm wondering that was his attempt to try to buy back some good grace with Trump. We'll have to see. Brian, my dear friend, when all is said and done, how many states do you actually think will withdraw their election maps? I get that we have many more states than what the Democrats do, but I wonder how many will follow through. Sure, we'll have to see. It'll come down to Trump. You know, Trump's got the power. Remember, Texas didn't want to do it, Brian. Texas just a couple of months ago, because you have wishy-washy Bushite Republicans that have taken over Texas politics over the last three decades. So they didn't want to upset the apple cart, as it were, with mid-decade redistricting. But Trump dropped the hammer on him, said, you need to do this. We're seeing the same thing in Missouri, Ohio has to do it by law, apparently. We're seeing the same thing in Florida, DeSantis, in your neck of the woods. DeSantis appears to be fully on board with that. You may end up only having like two or three Democrat representatives, which is two or three too much, but that's cool, especially with Miami-Dade just going so deep red. It's so incredible. How many states altogether? I would say right now about half a dozen, I think we're safe to say. But it may be more. It just depends how much Trump, I think, is pressuring the red states to do it. I think they need to go all out. I mean, again, the Supreme Court may be overturning the district that was drawn up in Louisiana that was the occasion for this lawsuit. Where just a group of citizens got together and said, you know what? We think this is reverse discrimination. You just drew up a congressional district that deliberately excludes white people. I think this is like discrimination and violation of 14th Amendment and all. So the VRA may get overturned by the way it's been abused with this whole notion of vote dilution. And if that happens, all bets are off. They're saying, you know, Democrats, that just in that act alone can lose up to 25 seats. So, because all of a sudden you have 25 districts that are overnight unconstitutional, have to be redrawn. And they're, as I understand, they're disproportionately in red states, southern states, Midwestern states, because that's where they've been pushing for these VRA redrawn districts. And so anyway, so just for the redistricting efforts, mid-decade redistricting efforts, probably about a half dozen states, I think, in the end. We'll do it by 2026, red states. Probably net us upwards of 14 to 20 seats. We'll see what happens in California. That's an uphill battle. And the Trump administration has already signaled they're going to sue over that because they're claiming they're violating their state constitution, which they are, and by bypassing the redistricting commission, which is embedded in the state constitution. So it doesn't matter if it passes in a referendum or things like that. So anyway, a lot of you've got those redistricting, half dozen probably. And then if the Supreme Court overturns VRA, all bets are off there. You got possibly another 20, 25 seats coming out of that. And then if you do get, if they're successfully get the new census that the majority of the American people wants. So Mark Mitchell, Rasmussen found that it has overwhelming support when people find out illegal migrants were illegal aliens were counted in the 2020 census. They get livid. They don't want that. They don't want illegal people who shouldn't be here to affect the constitution of their country. And so you put all that together and it could be a perfect storm of a Republican juggernaut for the foreseeable future in the House. Franz Paul, good morning, Dr. Steve. In the civilizationalist era, how do we standardize a system of value? Rather, who quantifies the value of things? That's a phenomenal question. I mean, there is going to be a certain cultural relativization there. And so value is going to be civilizational. Value is going to be inherent to a culture. So a Christian culture is going to value things differently than a Buddhist culture, and a Confucian culture is going to value things differently than an Islamic culture. But because we're human, and because we, in the classical sense, we're created in the image of God, because we have logical, ethical, and aesthetic, emotional, appetitive capacities that are distinctive to our humanity, there are at least some formal overlaps there. We all want the good. We all want the true. We all want the beautiful. And so what we found in wisdom traditions, in virtue traditions, in aesthetic traditions, there is a lot of overlap, very significant. There's a lot of divergence as well. But when you're talking about grand civilizations, there is tremendous overlap, because like Jordan Peterson says, there's an infinite way of doing it. There are infinite ways of doing human society, but only about a handful work. Only about a handful work, and only about a handful are stable, and only about a handful can last 1,000 years. Only about a handful can deal with millions upon millions of people. We're not talking, small indigenous tribal ethics and values and so on. Talking about civilizational values, only about a handful works. And it turns out that they're the seven great world religions that they correspond to, because all civilization is rooted ultimately in religion. And so I think what you do is you have this very interesting sort of universalist particularist play where values, the fact that we have values is itself universal. But how those values are defined and are given their true, good, and beautiful expression are always going to be very culturally worked out. They're always going to be very culturally specific. But because we're human, because we all have to have values, there's going to be some very interesting, I could use the word Venn diagram, but every time I do that, I hear that cackle in my head of Kamala, I love Venn diagram. Oh, I can't stand it. Anyway, I mean, I used to teach logic with Venn diagrams, but there's going to be the Venn diagram overlap. And that is going to be the point of commonality in an emerging discipline that's known as theopolitics. So our geopolitics is increasingly being defined by theopolitics. You saw it with Putin coming to Alaska, and how he met with the Archbishop of the Alaskan Orthodox Church. I don't know if you saw that, and presented him some icons from the Patriarch of Moscow. And the Archbishop of Alaska is part of an autonomous Orthodox Church, but they're both Orthodox. And so that point of commonality became a very important bridge for our two nations. Again, two different Orthodox churches, but with some Orthodox overlap in terms of Orthodox identity. So there's going to be a lot of sacred identity, value identity that has a lot of overlap that we can find commonality with Confucianism and Orthodoxy with the Chinese-Russian alliance, Hinduism and Orthodoxy with the Russian-India alliance, obviously Russia in Islam with like a Chechnya, Russia Federation Union, that kind of stuff. So that's what you zero in on, the fact that as humans, we must have values. So that's universal. Even if you said, we don't need values, I would smile and say, well, you value the fact we don't need values. So values are universal by nature, or the pursuit of value is universal by nature, but the pursuit of value becomes values in the multiplicity sort of way in which values get culturally worked out. But there is nevertheless still some objective overlap where they can all meet. I mean, sometimes you're gonna hit value supremacists who are basically trying to eradicate you, kind of like an ISIS or something. But then that's generally where the world, you know, rises up and takes them out. That's not, you know, we're not interested in anything like that. Chris Atom. Hey, Dr. Steve, just wanted to shed some light on what's going on here in California. City of Lodi has a population of, did I say it right? Lodi, Lodi? 69,000, leans Republican. They release a map to split our city into three districts. Yeah, that's what's going on there. And it's deeper than that too, as I understand, Chris. What they're also doing is they're disenfranchising Latino voters. Latino voters in California have been, as they are across the country, have been going increasingly Republican. And now they want to try to split up and dilute the Latino vote as well. So this is, ironically, this is good. Rich Barris has been doing some work on this, demographic work and polling work on this. This is already looking like it's going to experience a massive blowback where they think they are creating new blue districts, but they may actually just increase the defection among particularly Latinos. And if the supermajority of Latinos go red, California Democrat Party's cooked. It's gone. And they know it. And that's why they're just using this as an excuse. Make no mistake, Gavin Newsom knows that Latinos are going MAGA. They know that. Latinos are some of the most border security concerned voters on the planet. It's the complete opposite of the way the legacy media tries to portray them. They lie about everything else. Of course, they're going to be lying about Latinos. So Hispanics are one of the most conservative, socially conservative demographics in the country. They love border security. They love populism. And they love Trump. And the more every day that passes in the golden age, the more Latinos are becoming Republicans. The more Latinos are becoming full-blown nationalist populists. They are all for mass deportation, probably more than most other demographics. And California knows that. California also has an inordinate number of Latinos. And they know that if Latinos go full Republican, they're shot. They know that. And that is why I think Gavin Newsom is doing what he's doing. He's just using Texas as an excuse. This is for the survival of the Democrat Party in California. Because the entire Democrat Party in the nation knows if they lose California, it is permanently over for them. You might as well just start another party. Alan, with Bolton being raided, is it time to start canceling passports and staking out airport to make sure they don't sneak off? I have a feeling flight risks, huh? They're pulling a Texas Democrat thing in other countries. I have a feeling Bolton is going to turn into a songbird. We know that he has no scruples and he just wants to save his fanny. I agree with you 1,000%. I think this is what's freaking. I meant to get into that this morning, and in my notes I forgot to. But yes, there is the belief that Bolton is going to sing like a canary. And that's really what has the deep state freaking out. Because Bolton's had his fingerprint. He's got his fingerprints on everything in the swamp. And he may be the number one figure that they needed, his career bureaucrat, swamp creature. He may be the number one figure that they needed to start singing, offer him immunity, whatever they need to do to bring down everybody else. And he's just the guy who does. Like you said, he's got no value, so why not? Or his only value is to save his own hide. William, will do. Let me try some of my fine coffee of my. This is from my the unemployed Philosophical Guild cup. My daughter's got me this one Christmas. It's all the great artists from the age and philosophers and the like. So I love it. William, I told Dr. Steve Good AM is off the beaten path today, but wanted to get your opinion on this. I think sports pro and college may just have a deep problem with betting that they cannot control. They realize so much money from legal gambling establishments that may be infecting the game. I fear that they've opened up a proverbial Pandora's box. I could get into specific cases, but I wanted your thoughts. Thank you, Will. Great question, Will. Especially with the network society and the internet. I mean, now betting is just, betting is every, I found out there were bets on how long Trump and Putin's handshake would be on the tarmac there. I don't know. It may be a genie that she's out of the bottle and she can't put back. I don't know enough about it. I do stock market, of course, and I do crypto and all, but I guess technically that's gambling, but I don't do like sports betting, or I've never actually done sports betting to my knowledge, or take betting like that. I know there's guys like Robert Barnes who are like brilliant, you know, statisticians and data, and they know the odds of things. They're really, really good at betting, but I'm not. But I see the allure of it for sure. Being able to put in a little money and then see a lot come back, and the excitement of that's hard to beat. How it actually affects sports, I'd have to see. You would actually have to give me some of those examples, and then we can see what the historical precedent is for that. And that's it. All right, guys. Great hearing from all of you. Again, we'll have plenty of stuff, more videos all weekend, because the world never sleeps in the golden age. So keep your eyes abreast of what's new here on the channel. As always, if you're brand new, make sure to smack that bell and subscribe button for breaking the news and analysis you're not going to hear anywhere else. There you go. There it is. Smack that bell and subscribe button. Love seeing you guys. Love your comments, questions, and the like. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And God bless you all. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Turley Talks podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this episode with your friends. Help us defeat the fake news media and rank as the #1 news and commentary podcast all over the world. Come back again tomorrow for another episode celebrating the rise of a new conservative age.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.